Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning. I hope everybody enjoyed a nice Mother's Day weekend. The First Lady and I had the pleasure of taking our granddaughter Daniela to the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore, and we fed the elephants and the giraffes. We got to play with the pandas. It was pretty cool. I recommend a trip to the Maryland Zoo for anybody who hadn't done it. It was a great way to spend part of a weekend. And speaking of granddaughters, I want to congratulate the comptroller on the birth of his new granddaughter, Vivienne, this was last week. And I turn it over to my colleagues for any opening remarks, Madam Treasurer.
Well, you stole my
Do it again.
The thought of the comptroller and his lovely wife as grandparents is sort of daunting.
I can see her as a grandparent. It's just him.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Well, fortunately, she looks like her mother. I mean, her grandmother. Her mother and her grandmother.
Her mother's pretty good.
But, thank you very much for your good wishes.
That really is. That's very exciting. I've watched the new mother since she was quite a young girl.
Yep.
And I think she's going to be a wonderful mother, and Vivienne will become more and more interesting as she gets older and older. And
I have to admit,
back to you.
Yeah, originally the middle name was not. It's Vivienne Franco Borak. Abby took her husband's name, and originally the middle name was not going to be Franco, but I mounted a big lobbying campaign, and somehow it snuck back in there.
I'd like to mention a couple of things. I mean, this is going to be a big day, and it's going to be a big theater day. I understand that, but before we get to that. There were two important things happened at the University of Maryland College Park last week, and they happened with your support and great progress. The first was that the University of Maryland, along with the World Bank, were hosts on a major international climate change meeting, a two-day meeting downtown, which actually made progress, brought everybody together, public sector, private sector, international, and it had the Maryland name on it. And that, I think, is going to go very far in doing what we want to do to get Maryland on the globe. And secondly, on Monday, there was a dedication of the SAFE Center at College Park, which I know you all have supported also, a center focused on the victims of human trafficking, SAFE for safety, advocacy, freedom, because these are often people who are actually enslaved, and empowerment. This is in Maryland, in College Park, people brought to College Park, including not College Park, but Prince George's, right next to College Park, and Comptroller Montgomery, and the rest of the state, 100,000 people brought in, held in servitude, sexual servitude. And Maryland is taking the lead, bringing together the universities and all of their academic support, the legal force to help free these people and give them support, the social services, the health, student support. This is going to be a great model for the nation. And it, too, happened here just in the last 2 weeks. So this is something that's really important to all the people. Your Secretary of State, as you know, has been a very concerned leader in this area. It's one of these things I said at the opening. It's something that makes you very proud that we're doing this. It's the right thing to do. But it's a really terrible thing, too. And it helps us open our eyes to what's going on.
Well, thank you. And thanks for bringing those items up. And also at the University of Maryland, earlier in the week, we broke ground on the Brendan Areeb Center, which is going to be a science center for excellence around the world in really cutting-edge stuff. And we've invested $104 million, and we had a generous donation from Brendan Areeb of $34 million to get that building up and going, and it's going to be tremendous. We're going to be world leaders in some really cutting-edge science technology. Mr. Comptroller?
Thank you, Governor, and Madam Treasurer, for your good wishes. And, Governor, I know that we have a busy agenda today, but I would like to say a few words about the significance of the actions that we're going to take in a few moments. Today, this board fulfills one of its most important statutory duties to approve Maryland's public school construction program for fiscal year 2017 and a state bond program called QSAB, rather awkward acronym, but those programs allow our state to invest in improvements, second one, in aging school facilities. I'm proud of this board's continued support and unprecedented investments in our public schools and the insistence that our students and hardworking teachers and school personnel be able to learn and work in safe, healthy, cool environments. Contrary to some people's beliefs, the Board of Public Works has a statutory mandate and responsibility to oversee the public school construction program. And it is a fitting role for this board, and it stood the test of time. Our state has no greater obligation to our students and our hardworking teachers than to ensure that we're providing the best possible learning and working environments. And because of this board, these issues are discussed in a public setting, emphasize that, in a public setting, and they receive the undivided attention of the state's chief executive officer and the two principal fiscal officers of the state of Maryland. Despite recent efforts to prevent this board from exercising this responsibility, I believe that we are going to continue to do what is in the best interest of our kids and our teachers. Historically, and now more than ever, this board will continue to be a platform to safeguard the interests of taxpayers and families of Maryland and ensure they're getting the best value for their hard-earned money. We'll continue to hold public officials responsible for their priorities and choices, despite the fact that it may ruffle some feathers within the bureaucracy, in the back rooms of the Maryland General Assembly, and even in this beautifully appointed Senate lounge. We do have air conditioning here, but there are a lot of people here, and the air conditioning is, it's okay. At least we've got some. Think of being in this room with no cooling. Frankly, I don't care if it ruffles some feathers downstairs. I work for the taxpayers. I'll continue to hold bureaucrats accountable on their behalf in a public, transparent forum. We're going to continue this conversation, not in some unmarked conference room without public input or comment. Well, now I better stop, Governor, because I'm trying to remind myself I'm a grandfather and I need to control my passions. But I'd like to close by saying how thrilled I am, apparently, that there are so many concerned parents and there's so many great kids that have come down to meet with us this morning to share in this most open, transparent, and public of forums what their concerns and frustrations and suggestions are about how we can do better. And I'd like to personally thank every single member of the public who is here for your commitment to Maryland's kids. And I can assure each of you that we'll have quite a few discussion points during this morning. Governor, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, let's get started with the Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Madam
morning.
Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 23 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning. I just point out that item 23 is the Treasurer's resolution that there be a bond sale on June 8th. And then we're ready to go in any order we want.
Okay.
So items, there may be some that I actually have to put something on the record for you, but I'll let you start.
Yes, I'd like to look at item 17. Madam Secretary, I believe you have a clarifying addition to that.
Okay, so, yes.
If you could just very briefly indicate what the language is so that we're not ruffling too many feathers.
Is it not in writing?
I would want to explain about the regulation for the item is what not in writing.
There, oh, the comptroller was just saying.
I believe you're making a small addition to this
right,
case of
right,
factual
yes, I do, and I, the memorandum was handed out.
Good. Just that's all I want to have. You're offering
yes,
that, and
have
we're going to accept it.
It wasn't, but there. Okay, so to give background, the reason a revised item was not handed out because there were three possibilities of ways to revise it. Your
but you have the language, and
we
you can share it. Great. That's all I want, Madam Secretary. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I really value the expertise of your operation in advising the Board of Public Works. This is an extraordinarily important issue that we're facing right now. It's not the main event. That's going to be on item number 20. But this item number 17 is a very important regulation that will affect the health and safety of 40,000 children in the Baltimore region. 40,000 children that for the last 6 years, year after year after year after year, have been forced to go to school in unair-conditioned, unventilated classrooms. So it's going to bring relief to thousands of parents who worry about their kids, and also to hundreds, if not thousands, of teachers. This item, frankly, is just a bit of housekeeping, so I don't want to get everybody excited. This is just a warm-up for what we're going to be getting to. But it basically, let me just explain what the situation is. A couple of years ago when I brought this issue of this situation uniquely in Baltimore County and Baltimore City, not present in any other schools around the state, I got a lot of sarcastic pushback from the county executive up in Baltimore County saying, well, state law prohibits putting portable air conditioner units using state money in our schools. So you, Mr. Comptroller, are responsible for us not being able to do what you're telling us to do. Okay, we went and looked at it. Yep, these 1,700 classrooms in Baltimore County, unbeknownst to me, a couple of years ago, the IAC, a very important committee that answers to us, it's under our jurisdiction, they had, without any notice, passed a policy position that state money could not be used on portable air conditioning units. And when I asked them to go back and look at this, our expert legal staff, Ms. McDonald, Is it Jaffe?
Ms. Jaffe.
Yeah, Ms. Jaffe, thank you for being a good lawyer. Went back and said, yeah, in fact, the IAC did say a couple of years ago, apparently they got upset with you, Mr. Comptroller, they did pass a policy that said state money could not be used for portable air conditioning units. The problem is it was completely unauthorized and illegal. Because in order for a policy from the IAC to take effect, they have to have a vote of the Board of Public Works. So, understandably, they didn't want to bring it before a different board then. It was much more sympathetic to the IAC board, Governor, but they didn't want to bring it before this board because I'm sitting on it. And I would have asked them in the light of day why they would seek not just to not provide the money for the portable units, but to actually prohibit the use of state money. So they didn't do that, so we reviewed it and we said it's kind of murky and it hasn't been, we need to clarify it. So in January we proposed a regulation supported by all three of us, 3-0 vote, that said it is the policy of the Board of Public Works dictating, as under statute we're entitled to the IAC, that there shall be an option for the local jurisdictions if they want to spend state money on portable air units, air conditioning units, to provide relief for their kids and their teachers. That's legal. Now, we had to, in publishing a rule, we have to vote on it, then we have to have public hearings, and then we have to wait for the legislature to comment on it, but then it takes effect. And this regulation we voted on January will take effect if we have a vote today authorizing to move forward as of July 1st. which is the language I believe the Secretary is going to be proposed.
We're
going to
see that language?
Yes. Someday? And I don't... I just wanted to clarify what happened back in January, because it evoked a ferocious response from the most powerful, other than the governor, the most powerful politicians in the state of Maryland. And on the last day of the session, in a smoke-filled back room conference committee, highly irregular, they put language into the capital budget of all things, allegedly to prohibit the use of state dollars for portable air conditioning units. Well, this is kind of an extraordinary circumstance because it never happens. There was no public hearing. There was no notice. There was no opportunity for comment. Okay, so they went and did it because they could do it. And the legislature does have power. But here's the deal. They screwed it up. Because in order to prohibit the Board of Public Works from approving window air conditioning units using state money, they have to be explicit. And they have to say that. But the problem for the folks that oppose air conditioning units in Baltimore County and Baltimore City schools is that they can't come out in the light of day and say it, because it's so absolutely inimical to the interests of the kids and the teachers. So they have to do it covertly, and you'll see the language. Happy to read it if you want. It's a whole bunch of gobbledygook about something happening before January 1st, 2016. Doesn't mention the word air conditioning. So our council correctly looked at it and said, geez, they are ordering you to obey something that was not in effect because it was never approved by you. And they're ordering you kind of through kabuki theater that the legislative intent is that we not give relief to the kids using these box air conditioning units. And we think that is inappropriate, and our council, who I have great respect for, Madam Treasurer, I'll turn it over to you in a minute, they looked at this whole thing top to bottom and wrote us an advisory opinion that said what we're doing right now, this housekeeping proposal, is absolutely legal and appropriate on the merits. Okay, so we have our lawyers. Mike Miller has his lawyer. Somehow, deus ex machina out of the sky, drops this attorney general opinion. It says it's the view of all of our lawyers. They had like a dozen lawyers apparently working on this in the last 48 hours in some kind of a rush situation. It's the opinion of all of our legal experts at the AG's office that the intent of the legislature, despite the language not really meaning anything, the intent of the legislature was to prohibit the Board of Public Works from approving funds for portable air conditioning units, et cetera. That was the extent of the motion, of the opinion. So I called the Attorney General, a dear friend of mine. I said, Mr. Attorney General, what's this all about? He said, well, we just had to, Peter. Legislative intent. I said, really, have you been able to identify the legislator that actually offered the amendment in the back room? No, couldn't do that. Have you identified the legislator that seconded it in the small midnight conference room? No, we haven't that. So how do you know the legislative intent? Because there's no record, there was no hearing, there was no comment. Well, you know, we're their lawyers, and we like you, Peter, but, you know, we just got to go ahead and send the opinion.
That doesn't sound like a quote from an attorney general.
Well, you can call him and talk to him yourself, but he's a dear friend of mine. I've been his friend for 30 years.
Right.
And believe me, he's pained at night sleeping on this particular exercise because he knows that he's doing the bidding of the Senate President and others. And he openly will say what he's doing right now. So we're going to have to clarify today with this motion that as of July 1st, the AELR committee and other folks down the stairs do not have the right to block this policy decision by the Board of Public Works. And I didn't mean to go into this in such length, but I was just taken with the fact that we have such an open session. We're going to hear from kids, and I'm delighted to hear from them. And there's no Senate President, and there's no Speaker, and there's no County Executive here, because they can't come out and make the argument in the public. They get tongue-tied when you put a camera in front of them. All they talk about is we have the prerogative to do this in order that it not be done. But they can't mention the word air conditioning, because they know that if the public, you know. And I'll just conclude by saying there are three people in the state that apparently oppose immediate cooling relief for the almost 4,000 classrooms in Baltimore County and Baltimore City. Three people. The County Executive of Baltimore County, the Speaker of the House, and the President of the Senate. Now, they have a lot of people underneath them that do their bidding. But essentially, it's three people versus the 5.97 million Marylanders who have absolutely no problem with a small amount of money being used to provide box air conditioning units. And so I'm delighted that everybody's down here. I hope they can hear me out in the hallway. I hope the legislators that are here don't take it personally what I just said. It's not you guys, I don't think. nobody really knows because nobody will fess up, but that's what we're dealing with. We're going to do a housekeeping vote, and I would move that we adopt the regulation effective July 1st, Governor, and there's a second. Terrific.
I assume you'll second it. Yeah, can I have as much time as you thought?
Well,
okay, thank you.
You won't
appreciate
need
it.
As much time.
No, hopefully I won't.
You'll be happy all the time you need.
But the comptroller did mention Kabuki Theater. I said political theater. I want to make clear we all care about children. We all care about teachers. We all care about classrooms. I find it difficult to work sometimes in hot, humid conditions. I understand that. But that's not what this is about. This is theater, and some people are being used, and they oughtn't to be. The true story. It's my turn, and I appreciate our attorney. I know our attorney is very new on the job, and she really took it on, and I do appreciate it. I believe, however, the attorney general of the state is the attorney general of the state, and this is not a procurement item. So that's just a different view. But what I do object to is the mischaracterization of just about the entire history of this. And there are experts here. Dr. Lever is here. People care about school construction. Maryland has had a school construction process that has been nationally known and that helps us get a AAA bond rating and help build schools when other states weren't doing it. And it's based on local decisions, local school authorities talking about education, local governmental authorities who have to raise the taxes talking about local funds. They have a priority. In fact, this is what the law provides. They come to the interagency committee, which is the state committee composed of the education, the planning, the general services people, and they have their local lists. They are examined in terms of number of students in classrooms, the adequacy of the infrastructure, and they are approved on a list sent to the Board of Public Works, which can amend or approve them. That process has stood us well, and in that process, we use, in this instance, 15-year general obligation bonds to fund the school construction. One of the questions is, do you want to be paying for 15 years for something that lasts 5 or 6 years? In the case of Baltimore County, they've already adopted
a budget and a CIP, which says the classrooms will be air-conditioned by August 2019. I heard earlier that was just going to be in the budget and they weren't going to be done until 22 or 23. That's not so. You'll feel glad to know. So they have a plan to do this. This is according to the method that we have always used. But now, all of a sudden, not only, actually, does some people want to authorize the use of these temporary room air conditioners, which are significantly shorter term than what are in the plans, but they want to use long-term money, first of all, and they want to do it despite the fact that the legislature, which voted on the floor, I mean, there are discussions, there were legislative staff papers. This was not a new discussion, and it came about because the comptroller indicated to the legislative leadership in December that, in fact, we couldn't do window air conditioners and a change would have to be made. There was discussion about that, and it was put in the budget that it should not be used, that the funds, the long-term funds, should not be used for 2017. So that's the law. So first of all, we have a process that is being abrogated, and a political board is deciding. I love the Board of Public Works. There is sunshine. It is transparent, just like voting on the floor is transparent. But even if it's transparent, it can't do something that is contrary to law and oughtn't do something that is imprudent, expensive, and contrary to the process that has stood us so well. The local government and local school board make very tough decisions. Everybody would like everybody throughout the state to have first-class new schools, enough space for everybody, good infrastructure. We all want that, but we have to make tough decisions, and we have a way of making the tough decisions. If all of a sudden we are going to start a new system of this board cramming down into the process their policy priorities, I think it's a very bad mistake. Maybe very good theater. I think it's very bad public policy. And finally, I'm very concerned as state treasurer when we go out to the market, if we try to get people to invest in our bonds this year and they are to fund things which are not authorized in law, we obviously can't have an unqualified bond counsel letter, and we'll find it very difficult to market the bond. So I think it's bad policy. I'm very sympathetic with the children. I'm glad, Comptroller. I think it's because you raised it. I honestly believe that it put this issue front and center, and it did move up by several years, the air conditioning of the schools. I hope it wasn't in place a boiler repair, because that can be very dangerous, of the roofs and the other things that the locals had earlier had on their priorities. But to do it this way is simply wrong. You said it was kabuki theater. I don't disagree, although I'm not sure about the kabuki part. But I think it's taking the wrong step, especially in the face of both legislative action and, as you know, the Attorney General's letter and opinion, which you referred to and which I think we all have copies of. That's my position. That's why I can't go along with your motion. And I think it's a bad motion, and I'm very sorry it's going to happen.
Okay. Thank you. I'd just like to clarify that the local Board of Education voted to spend some of their $40 million surplus on fixing the air conditioners immediately and taking $10 million to immediately install the window air conditioning. So it's not interfering with the local. The county executive vetoed that and cut it out of the budget. And I agree with the comptroller that it was the county executive of Baltimore County, the president of the Senate, the speaker of the House, who were interfering with the process. And I agree that we can't wait 5 years for these kids to be sweating.
I'm going to second the comptroller's motion. Say to the contrary. I just want, for the
motion,
record.
Okay. Well, I'll just let you know that is what happened.
Well,
it was cut out of the budget.
Maybe there's somebody here.
We'll talk about that
there,
further as we get into item number 20, but I'm going to second the comptroller's motion.
Thank you. I just will comment. I had the biggest laugh in a long time reading the morning paper and reading about Mike Miller saying he's really upset because we're involved in politics. But I actually had my biggest laugh reading the editorial from the Baltimore Sun. Not sure anybody reads that thing, but...
I laughed out loud.
Yeah. They ended up saying at the end, we oppose air conditioning for 40,000 kids because basically we think it's fiscal responsibility. Well, if that isn't the first time I've ever seen those two words on the editorial page of the Baltimore Sun in my 30 years in politics. Fiscal responsibility. So, Madam Treasurer, in January, you joined us in voting for this because we're simply authorizing the local jurisdiction, if they wish to exercise it, to have the option. And you were, I think, correct in saying we have no problem with providing an option to these folks. If you choose to be against it now, that's okay. But, Governor, thank you for seconding it, and I would move the motion.
I vote aye.
I vote aye.
We still don't have the motion before us.
I just moved to off to...
So item 17, the record...
Isn't it normal, if you want something in the record, to actually have it in the record?
I think he did say it, and we have votes.
Thank you.
We're talking about transparency.
Madam Treasurer, maybe you could help me on transparency and help me. You were representing the legislature. Who the heck made the motion? You're speaking of writing. Who wrote the amendment? Who wrote the amendment that we're dealing with? Who voted? Who made the motion?
I like to take an oath to the public. I'm not representing anyone. I'm asking you what of these things you're voting on.
Thank you, Madam Secretary.
The Secretary. Yes. Which of these things are we voting on?
Secretary McDonough, would you clarify the motion?
The revised motion into the record. And the revised part is going to be the second sentence. I'm going to read you two sentences. The first sentence was in there. The second sentence is the revision that the comptroller has moved. That the Board of Public Works take final action to adopt an amendment to a regulation under COMAR Title 23.03, Board of Public Works Public School Construction. This adoption is not effective until July 6, 2016. My understanding as to why the comptroller has proposed that revision to the motion is because a letter came in from the AOR committee. I just want to put that on the record. The AOR committee did ask the board to not adopt the regulation while they had a hold on it. In light of that, the earliest possible dates would be July 6th. And so I understand that letter is the reason that the comptroller is suggesting that these...
So it's three of these?
Right.
Yes.
And could I ask the Attorney General whether this is, in fact... I don't think this is legal. Am I allowed to ask or...
You can ask whatever you want. We're taking the vote today.
But I think it ought to be on the record whether the Attorney General of the state believes that this is... I think that's only...
Is the Attorney General here?
Yes.
Deputy Attorney General.
Good morning. Liz Harris from the Office of the Attorney General. I feel compelled to say at the outset, even though I did not participate in the conversation that you have with the Attorney General, I am quite confident that he did not acknowledge and does not believe he's doing anybody's political bidding with respect to this.
Let's just stick to the details instead of your opinions about politics.
This was a charge that was
Let's answer the legal question and not insert your opinion, okay? Go ahead.
Sure. So the statutes lay out a process for the promulgation and adoption of regulations. If that process is not followed, the effect of it is that the regulations don't have effect. So our advice to the board is, if you want the regulations to be put into place, and we said you can move forward with the regulations, that you need to follow the process and the timelines that are set forth in the law. I think, actually, board counsel is in basic agreement that that is the safer course in terms of nobody alleging that the board's regulations don't have effect. So, yes, the advice of the Attorney General's office is you follow the timelines. At your July meeting, you can vote to adopt the regulations and that you will have followed the process and that the regulations will be effective. If you move forward with respect to adopting those regulations today, the statute is very clear that any regulations that don't follow the statutory process have no effect.
However, if we're putting this in at your suggestion or someone's suggestion, and I think it's entirely appropriate, legislature does it all the time. They vote on things and make it contingent on either a date or some action. And I'm very confident, with all due respect to you, Deputy Attorney General, our counsel are just as good as yours. And they are superb. And they have looked at this thing with objectivity, not with a slant. And I am, you know, give my regards to the Attorney General. I am a dear friend of his for more than 30 years. And he knows the truth of what I was saying, and I appreciate your defense of him. But this is a highly charged, highly irregular, highly unusual intervention by the most powerful politicians other than the governor in the state in an issue that affects the health and safety of 40,000 kids. And so when I say that he lies awake at night and worries about being on a short leash, yeah, I mean it. And he knows what I'm talking about.
So,
the Attorney General, can I not? I can't respond to the personal attacks against my office.
Well, we've got your opinion. We happen to disagree with your opinion. We thank you for expressing it, but we're not here to debate with you.
Can I respond to the point about the difference between an adoption and an effective date that the Comptroller raised?
If you do it very quickly, go ahead.
In all circumstances, there is when regulations are promulgated, there is a difference between the adoption and the effective date. And the language speaks to when the regulation can be adopted. If you adopt it today, we believe that calls into question the validity of it. And we think board's counsel, who you trust, said essentially that cautioned against that option because it could call into question the validity of the regulations. Thank you.
Could I also say the Attorney General is the attorney for the state? I have great respect for our counsel. Their authority is delimited in law. Forgot to point that out. And that historically and at this moment, the Attorney General is the attorney for this board, just like all the other boards and agencies of the state government. So my question is, are all the opinions which we have received part of the public record now? So people
can go
and see.
Yes, I have received copies of.
Were they answered?
Yes, they're all in here. Do you want me to articulate which ones are in here?
I just want to make sure, because I was told that unless we asked specifically, they would not be entered. And I want to make sure
are. I don't know about that, Madam Treasurer. The things that I have received are all in the record.
The letter from the bond counsel, the two letters from...
Okay,
exactly.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to thank Secretary McDonald and Dory Jaffe, our board counsel, for their thorough memo and sound legal advice on this matter. We certainly appreciate Assistant Attorney General weighing in with their opinion. We don't agree with it. We're going to move forward. I seconded the motion. There's a vote on the floor. The vote is now 2-0. We move on.
Did you ask for votes again?
Yes, we did it earlier before this whole discussion.
Great.
So you want to change your vote?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I want to
2-1. 2-1. Thank you. Now I'd like to move on to item number 20. We have a number of folks here from Baltimore County and Howard County to speak about the final approval of the FY 2017 Capital Improvement Plan for our public schools. I don't have the list in front of me, but we want to go ahead and call the... so I guess we'd like to call Kiami Sullivan first. Is she here?
Yeah.
Senior at Kenwood High School. Good morning. I'm right up to the microphone.
We don't
have... Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Kiami Sullivan. I'm a senior at Kenwood High School. I'm in the International Baccalaureate program there. I guess I'm here to emphasize the importance of AC to the students, just to give you, like, a student's perspective, because... as an international baccalaureate student, we take very rigorous courses. We take not only AP courses, but IB courses, which is it's set up similar to a college class. And to say that it is one of the hardest things that we have to do is try and learn in an environment where it's 100 and something degrees. And it's not just 10 days. It's in the spring, it's in the fall, it's basically all the time, unless there's snow outside, it's hot, and it's hard to learn. And it's been proven that it's important for us to test in these AC conditions, but you're testing us on material that we've learned in a hot environment where you're sitting there, you have tunnel vision, you have a headache. How is that supposed to, help us test? I feel like You know, they call the box units or the portable AC, they call it a Band-Aid, but I would rather have a Band-Aid now and we can get them in now instead of waiting 5 years. Kids are graduating. Kids are still testing in this time, and it's more important for us, I feel like, to get it now and immediately than have to wait all that time. It's dangerous to me. Kids are passing out. Kids are going to the nurse. My brother can't even go to school because he has asthma because it's hot. Like, this is not only hard for our learning, but it's a health risk. And the air, it's just so many things that would be fixed if we could get AC today or over the summer so that my brother can actually have a full day of school and not miss out on school, so that my sister can stop complaining about headaches. It's not for me. It's for my siblings.
Thank you, Kiana. Thank you very much.
Are the young people staying here for the whole? Because you'll want to hear what your school, what in fact, the timing is of all the air conditioning now.
Yeah.
You mentioned 5 years or whatever.
We'd like to call up Kira Vistry or Vistry. Kira? Good morning.
Hello, my name is Kira Vistry, and I've been to all of these air conditioning meetings, and to the IAC meeting I spoke as well, so I've seen plenty of you. But I'm also in the International Baccalaureate Program at Kenwood High School. I'm a graduating senior. And basically everything Kiami said is totally true. But it gets... I use this to emphasize things, and this is like a literal statement. One of my teachers earlier in the school year told me that she found out that it was about 72 degrees in a Baltimore jail, and I told her that we should just pick up the class and go ahead and study there because it was about 98 in my classroom every day for weeks. And I think that somebody who's in a program that requires so much intrinsic motivation who would rather study in a jail, because I have no interest in being in a prison, absolutely no interest. But, I mean, if I can get my work done there, because, you know, I'm trying to go to college, and, you know, I'm very motivated by myself to get things done for me and for my, you know, my future. So, I mean, if I had to study in a jail, I would have, but I just don't understand why. You know, people can say that these kids are your future because my nephew has horrible asthma, and he's just missed a lot of school, and he's only 9, and it's only gotten worse as he's gotten older, and he has health conditions. He has ADHD as well, and, you know, him studying in that, like, him working in that heat, especially since now things are more rigorous even for the younger kids, like, it's nearly impossible, and I just can't sit here and, like, have people tell me to my face that these kids are our future, but these kids can't get an education. So how are we going to have people like all of you on the board, but they can't get a proper education because they can't focus, because the schools are going to take however many years to get full AC. Like, my school is huge, and honestly, I don't think they're going to get it done in the time that they say they are, because as of right now, like, their progress isn't saying that a school that big is going to be done in time. So I just really think that you have to think that, you know, you all are well-educated people, so why shouldn't the children be well-educated?
So your testimony is that the Baltimore County jails are air-conditioned, but you hear, but not the schools.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. And then secondly, you talk eloquently about the health risk. What about the learning environment of a 98-degree classroom?
A lot of times, you know, teachers try to bring in fans, but fans are incredibly loud, and really blowing around super hot air doesn't actually cool anything down unless you're directly in front of the fan. So it kind of just gets terrible because then teachers are trying to yell over fans, and people are trying to concentrate, and, like, taking exams is awful in heat like that because it's stuffy, and then some, depending on your building, like, I know the top floor on Kenwood's, in Kenwood, we don't have great circulation, but, I mean, that's how the school's built. But regardless, it's very stuffy, and, you know, it gets very humid in Maryland, too. So the heat and the humidity added together is a horrible thing to deal with. People are trying to sweat and take exams, and, you know, you can't You just can't do that. You can't be sweating and try to take an exam. Like, heat has a known effect on how people can concentrate. So, you know, you want people to succeed. You want people to get into college. People want to get into college. But if I have to take an incredibly important test and to get these grades and to get all these things to get into college to build a future for myself, and I can't do that because of the heat, then, you know, what does that leave for me to do? What am I going to do? Thank you.
Thank you, Kira.
You make an excellent presentation every time you come.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I hope that you also will stay and listen to what the plans are. You don't believe them, but I can't help that. But that's what the plans are. And know that everybody wants as good a learning environment as possible for all of our students. I have students in the schools myself. But there are very tough decisions to be made, and you don't want things like boilers exploding, roofs leaking. They're tough decisions.
I believe you. Thank you very much.
No, let me thank you for your testimony, because you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And I understand what the treasurer is alluding to, but that's just a lot of baloney. This can be done immediately. It should be done. And thank you for your testimony. It was eloquent.
Thank you.
Next on the list, we have Alexandra Radomski.
Radomski.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Did I pronounce your name right, Alexandra?
Yeah. I'm Allie Radomski, and I'm a freshman at Patapsco High School. This is kind of like deja vu for me, because in 2011, I was here at the same exact issue. I was in like a sparkly pink tutu. I was in fifth grade, and I actually walked out of here. My 11-year-old self walked out of here thinking that I had actually like gotten something done. I was so proud of myself, and then I'm back doing the same exact thing in 2016. I have never been in an air-conditioned classroom except for testing, which is in a computer room, so obviously it's going to be air-conditioned. And for testing, I don't understand how we have air-conditioning for testing and we're testing what we learned throughout the year in non-air-conditioned classrooms. So I don't see the point in that. I graduate in May of 2019. And their air conditioning is projected to be installed in December of 2019. So that means I'll have spent 13 years in BCBS schools, never being in an air-conditioned classroom. I think that every student in BCBS deserves to have air-conditioned classrooms, because if we're going to be tested on the same material, and some students have been learning in air-conditioned classrooms and some have been not, I don't think it's fair that we're being tested on the same level, because we're obviously not going to have the same opportunity to get good scores. So I believe that the testing isn't accurate because of that. I'm taking AP classes starting next year as a 10th grader, and it's already hard enough taking GT class after GT class. I take all GT classes right now. And it's already hard enough sitting there learning in that, the humid classrooms, heated. In the beginning of the year, I had a teacher with 34 kids in my class, in my English class. It's one of the smallest classrooms in the school. We had 5 fans, and it didn't really make a difference whether you had fans or not, because like Kira said, like, you're just pushing around the hot air. So it doesn't really make a difference if we have fans or not. And I think that putting in the window units now, even though it's a Band-Aid, is better than having nothing at all.
Thank you, Alexander. Thank you very much for coming this morning. Next we have Alan Southworth. Is Alan with us? Good morning.
Good morning, sir. My name is Alan Southworth. I've been a lifelong resident of Baltimore County for over 45 years. I stand here with my daughter Elizabeth, who was also here in 2011 when she was a second grader, and we were trying to fight for air conditioning for Middleborough Elementary off of the one-time alcohol tax. Comptroller Francia was the only one who voted in favor for the box units. Madam Treasurer, I do want to thank you for bringing up the realities, the harsh realities of climate change. Each year, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter. This said, I'd like for everybody in this room to take a moment and imagine that you're a parent like I used to be, who would send their child to a classroom that wasn't air-conditioned. Imagine getting an email at 7:30 in the morning from your child's second-grade teacher to let you know that it was already 94 degrees in her classroom at 7:30 in the morning. Schools weren't even going to open the doors for another hour. Now think about it, if you have to take off for the third consecutive day only to watch your daughter or son come off a bus and see their face flushed red, their hair matted down with sweat, clothes soaked through, you take off their shoes and socks, and their toes are shriveled up because they've been sweating all day. And you look at the weather report, and you're going to have more of the same, day after day after day. And it doesn't have to have a heat index of 95 degrees to have the classrooms that staggeringly uncomfortable. So when you get frustrated and you contact your county executive, you get a response from their chief of staff to tell you that they've looked into this issue with the non-air conditioned schools and that they only have to put up with it for about 17 days. He had the 17 days number like that. And I was told this on the very same morning that it was 94 degrees in my daughter's classroom at 7:30. As Comptroller Francho had pointed out, there are 40,000 children right now in 43 un-air-conditioned schools. This represents a moral imbalance of fairness, of providing a safe and conducive environment for everyone to learn, for everybody to be on a fair and level playing field. And I've recently read that the box unit's response from Baltimore County was that it was a waste of money. Now, I applaud Baltimore County schools for their air conditioning efforts to put permanent central air conditioning in their schools. But at your current rate, it's looking at about 2025 before this is going to get done. These kids need relief now.
Is there
now
an opportunity to correct this?
No, let them.
Everyone in this room, we have political leaders, business leaders. We have a moral obligation to stand up for the ones who doesn't have a voice. I thank you for your time this morning, Treasurer Kopp, Governor Hogan, and Comptroller Francho. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Next on the list, we have Michael Derenberg. Is Michael with us this morning?
I hope there will be an opportunity to set the record.
Well, after all the testimony, we get to talk as much as we want.
No, I just don't want to frighten the children and the families unnecessarily.
They're living in it. It's their reality. Good morning. I'm Michael Danberg, and this is my son, Owen. We were here 5 years ago. Owen was about this tall.
Yeah.
And I have to decide if I need glasses or not glasses. But anyway, we stood here to ask you to please vote no for allowing the money from the alcohol tax to go towards lockers and stage lighting, and instead have that money put towards air conditioning in Baltimore County's public schools. Although some of the faces have changed, many remain the same. In 2011, we had a disengaged governor who kept his face buried in his iPad and would look up when the room went silent because he knew you were done speaking. We had a school superintendent whose most important principle was all means all. Yet he let half his students and staff bake in unair-conditioned classrooms. All means all really meant all means half. Today we have some changes and some new faces. We have a new, young, energetic school superintendent who's building a pathway to digital learning, who's the head coach for his team, BCPS. But on that team which he's built, there must be a varsity team and a JV team. Because he still lets a good portion of his team and the children they teach work in an environment where temperatures reach over 100 degrees, where children get a choice to drink water from fountains which dispense brown drinking water or to go without, where there's a team member school sinking into the pond behind it. Go team. We have a new governor who understands the importance of a safe and conducive learning environment. When pressing the counties to move along and install portable air conditioning units, the counties went back by saying, how can we do it without eligible money from the state to do so? This governor, along with the comptroller and many stakeholders, did everything they could to help the counties and help the schools bring much-needed relief to Team BCPS. The wall is knocked down, and state funds are now eligible for portable air conditioning. But as you would have it, in a typical Annapolis style, where legislators have forgotten that they work for the people, they built another wall, this one bigger and better, a very Trump-like wall. They took away the ability for the state funds to be used for portable air conditioning and forgot those people they were elected to help. Go team. 5 years ago, I thought I heard it all when it came to this matter. Don Mohler told me there are only 17 days when air conditioning is not needed. When asked why certain schools were getting money from the school alcohol from the alcohol tax for new lockers and stage lighting, County Executive Kevin Kavanagh's reply was to reward those legislators who voted for the tax, because it was a hard vote. As I stood in this air-conditioned building built in 1772, I was told by Michael Sines that the school's buildings were too old to have air conditioning installed. So enough with the nonsense and the excuses. Let's do the right thing and give the children an environment which is safe and conducive to learning, and treat all team members with equally and with the respect that they deserve. Go team. Thank you.
Next, we have Catherine Bloom. Good morning.
Hi, I'm very nervous. I am a parent of two children who are, well, one graduated and is at UMBC now, but she was in Baltimore County Public Schools, and my son is currently a 10th grader at Lansdowne High School. One thing that I wanted to talk about when I was hearing 17 days is that we all took a tour. There were some people here that took a tour with us of Lansdowne, and it was 67 degrees outside, and we were sweating inside. So it's not 67 days. It's about 5 months. 5 months maybe of cool and 5 months of unbearable heat. I thank you guys so much, Governor and Comptroller, for your support and your help. It really means a great deal. I respectfully disagree with you, Madam Treasurer. There are a few points that I'd like to make. I hear what you're saying, that there's this great plan, that there's going to be air conditioning, and I respectfully say to you that I've seen plans. I've seen Arbutus Middle School get the ductwork for central air conditioning 10 years ago. They still don't have air conditioning at Arbutus Middle School. So it's a great idea to have a plan, and the county's full of great ideas that we're going to get air conditioning and we're going to get fixes, and we don't. And I invite you to come to Lansdowne and take a tour and see the disrepair that this school has been left in, because other projects have taken precedence in the county, and that school has been left behind. And it's objectionable. And that's the same with air conditioning. And it's not right that our kids have to suffer. I have reports that studies that have been done that when you're in a heated classroom, you have lower test scores, you have decreased memory ability, lack of energy, you lose focus. And that's unacceptable. And maybe the scores at Lansdowne for our kids are so low on standardized tests because they're in classrooms that are uncomfortable and excessively hot. I also am frustrated that what I wrote ran off from 2011. This issue was brought up, and our comptroller supported that, and it's gone nowhere. And all I see are politicians that want to play games and do the wrong thing and obfuscate and block as much as they can, and I really am disappointed in that. We should be doing the right things and getting relief for our kids and teachers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Patty Hathaway.
Could I just say that just because we don't agree on some of the specifics doesn't mean that we don't have the same goals, and I don't question your or anyone's motives.
Thank you. Patty, good morning.
Hello. I'm a long-term resident of Baltimore County. I'm an alum of Lansdowne High School. My daughters are alums, and my grandchildren will be attending there, hopefully in a better situation than it is in now. Now, I'd like to really thank Governor Hogan and Governor Franchot for your support. It does mean a lot.
Easy.
Thank you.
We're getting along great.
What you call him?
Yeah, Comptroller Franchot.
Comptroller, sorry.
Happy Comptroller.
Okay, I'll leave you there. And I understand where Madam Treasurer is coming from. I did a lot of accounting work in my time for the state of Maryland. But I also know that some things should come first. And that is the health and safety of our children. And right now, your disagreement with this puts a lot of children, 40,000 as a matter of fact, in harm's way. I have children with asthma. I have asthma. I could not take the heat in that school. I was on that tour, and I came home with a coughing spell for a half hour from being in that hot, humid building. And it was only 60-some degrees outside. So the portable air conditioning units, while it's been called a Band-Aid, I think it's much more than a Band-Aid. I think it's a solution to save the health of the kids, put them all in an equitable state for learning, testing, and being able to maintain their health, along with our educators who are suffering the same way. We have teachers in Lansdowne who have umbrellas over their desks because of leaking roofs, which have already been repaired, and they still need repair again. That's in the proposed budget of renovating the school. That will take time, we realize. It doesn't take that long to put an air conditioning unit in a window. It doesn't take that long to purchase it. It doesn't take that long to put it in. And the benefits it will provide far outweigh the cost over and over again. And once those units are no longer needed, some 5, 6, 10, 20 years down the road when you get around to renovating this building, and I'm sorry, I've seen the plans. I've seen Dr. Dance not submit our plan this year because he never turned the paperwork in to the BPW, and the feasibility study was late and riddled with errors. So I don't have any faith in that plan. I have faith in action. I have faith in providing our kids with the right things to be able to be where you are now, to have the opportunities. I have quite a few degrees. I have benefited from the University of Maryland system. I worked there for years, retired from there, and got 2 degrees from there. I don't think I could have done it. I went to Lansdowne when climate change hadn't really started that much. Our classrooms weren't that hot. Maybe a couple days in June, that was it. Nothing like they are now. That school is just not what it was. It's an older school. And when you go to add air conditioning to a school that's in the shape of a Y with two extra buildings, that central air isn't going to work like a newer building. So if you go that route, those portable units will still be used. They will have a lifetime of probably 15 years. I've owned a portable air conditioner that lasted 20. You can shake your head all you want.
No.
They can last that long if they're properly maintained. And they can be used for backups when the central air doesn't work. It does happen. So saying that they're not going to be long-term, that's a matter of opinion, and I think facts will bear me out on it. There are air conditioners in the school for the rooms that have tech. And some of those air conditioners are old. I mean, we have pictures of them. There are no 5-year air conditioners. Those things have been there for years. Have one teacher's been there for 15 years, and that air conditioner's been there as long as he has. 15 years, there you go. So the excuses and the political football you're all playing, it's not what you should be doing to our kids. They're not a football. This isn't about politics or about the game of, oh, I want him not to make it, so I'm going to vote against that. These are our kids. These are your constituents, and you need to treat them better. They deserve so much better. And if you don't think I'm right, I tell you what. All the months that you have your air conditioning on, turn it off. Let's see you work in that condition. Could you do it? You said yourself at the beginning you don't like the heat.
I don't disagree with that.
Okay, if you don't disagree with it, then take care of the situation. I don't want to hear that the budget, I've worked with budgets. I could sit down there and redo your school budget. I redid the feasibility study. It had so many errors in it. I could show you how this works. I'd be glad to help. But I don't think I need to. I think you just need to know you've got to do the right thing. These kids and teachers need our help.
Thank you very much.
Can I ask a question? Yes. Ma'am, could you come back up, because I have one question for you, and thank you for that testimony. It was very straightforward. And the last desperate line of defense from Baltimore County, well, it's just the county executive. He's the only one that cares about opposing this, apparently.
Yeah.
The last desperate line of defense is that if we actually asked him to put window units in, he would have to rip out the walls of old schools and redo the entire electrical connection system, and how awful this would be. And my
really?
Understanding is that Anne Arundel put 500 air conditioning units in, and they had that same concern about the ability of the old electrical
mm-hmm.
system. And they simply got BG&E over there, and they put up a line, run it up the outside of the school,
mm-hmm.
connect the air conditioning units, and they've been there for, well, they were put in 2012, and most of them are still working very,
mm-hmm.
very nicely.
If they're maintained, they will last. And the electrical issues obviously are not a problem. We already have some at Lansdowne.
Oh.
They don't rip out walls. They put them in windows. Now, you can put a hole in a wall and put it in the wall instead of in the window. It's an option. But there are plenty of options there. The electrical is already updated in many of the wings. And in the budget, I read before coming here, the money is in there for the electrical updates and the security updates. So, again, another excuse shot down.
I hesitate to ask whether the administrators have
yes,
air
they have
conditioning.
Air conditioning.
Oh, so they're offices at Lansdowne.
The offices
air conditioned.
Are air conditioned. The tech rooms with all the computers are air conditioned. There are several, but
we're
not up to 50% at all.
And the classrooms are not.
The classrooms are not. Only the ones with computers, and they don't have that many of those.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You. Next, we have the Reverend Dr. Alvin Hathaway, Senior Pastor of the United Baptist Church. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning. Good morning, Governor. Good morning, honorable members of the board. Our church is located in West Baltimore. It was where our campus is located was really on the third stop of that very fateful ride of Freddie Gray. There at that corner, we have a Head Start building, a 30,000-square-foot Head Start building. We have been in the Head Start business for 47 years. That building is a state-of-the-art building. It has air conditioning, it has smart boards, it has all of the amenities that you need for learning. We partner with University of Maryland School of Social Work. I co-chair what is known with the Dean of Social Work, Promise Heights. Promise Heights' intent is to provide wraparound services to those schools that are in our community so that we can continue the upward academic trajectory of our students. The schools that we work in are one Furman Templeton Academy, historic Samuel Coleridge Taylor, Gilmore Elementary School, Booker T. Washington Middle School, and Renaissance Academy. We work in those schools. Of those schools, only one school has air conditioning, which is Furman Templeton Academy. All those other students there do not have it. And they talk about, and one of the things we assess is called school climate. And that usually deals with the temperament. It usually deals with the attitudes. What they don't measure is the actual climate in terms of temperature in those schools, in terms of hot and cold. And so I would just say to you that I was happy to hear that in the motion that it leaves to the option of the local school board to make a decision as to the allocation. Because as the school system and as this honorable state has awarded Baltimore City construction funds, none of the schools in our neighborhoods are on that first round of funding. And so so we do need an immediate solution to provide cooling, immediate solution to provide a better environment for learning for our students there in Baltimore City, there in West Baltimore, in the area in which we serve, in the area in which we are deeply concerned about the health of our children.
Thank you, Pastor, very much for being here today. Next, we have Lily Rowe from the Central Area Advisory Council. Good morning.
Good morning. Governor Hogan, Comptroller Fancho, and Treasurer Kopp, it is my pleasure to be here. I can't believe that I'm here for a number of reasons, some surreal and some absurd, but the first thing I want to do is say that Governor and Comptroller, your staffs are excellent. They have spent time answering my questions. I have made it my business over the last 9 months that in the time it would have taken to gestate a child, to gestate my understanding of the budget process. And let me tell you, Mark Nugent, Valerie Radomski, Len Foxwell, Manuel Welsh, they have spent the equivalent of educating me. I should have a master's degree now from these individuals. They have talked to me at 1 o'clock in the morning on Facebook. We sent me documents and things. I cannot even express to you how much they deserve promotions and raises. They are the absolute...
Hey, now let's not get carried away. Maybe we'll give them an attaboy. How about a round of applause? Round of applause. We've got to hold off on the raises. We've got tight budgets.
Your office is the absolute epitome of constituency services. And so I would like to just explain a bit of exactly how we got to this point, because how we got to this point, I believe, will elucidate Treasurer Kopp on some of the things that we're facing in Baltimore County government, why it is you see county constituents appealing to the state. So the capital budget process in Baltimore County is such that plans are brought to the Board of Education that are a dollar amount in a school. Nothing is given to the Board of Education about what the project actually is. It's just literally a dollar amount in the school. The Board of Education is told, well, you can't really ask too many questions because we don't have time. You have to vote on this today. And so they do. And all I know is a dollar amount in a school. And the public has been asked for feedback. But what are you going to say? No, don't give this school money. You have nothing to actually give feedback on because there's no scope of work. There's zero documentation included in this. So then it goes to the county council, and at the level that the county council, the public, should be giving feedback, the county council has nothing more than a dollar amount in a school. And so they do the same thing, and the public has nothing to say because what are you going to say? Don't give the school money? There's no information to actually give the feedback on. And so what ends up happening is the documentation that the IAC requires and that the Board of Public Work requires is the first indication that the public has as to what the details of the project are. And at that point in time, if they have an issue with it and they go to the school system or the county government, the school system and the county government say, oh, I'm sorry, it's been voted on. We're just going to plow through and do whatever we want, regardless of what the parents want, regardless of the fact that the organizational chart of the school system says that the parents and the public are the highest point in the organizational chart. We have been completely cut out of the loop until this moment. And so what ends up happening is we end up having to lobby the state when we should have been able to lobby the Board of Education and the county government, because at the point in time that we find out what's going on, you're the last rung on the ladder for us to do anything about horrific things that are happening. Now, let me tell you what's happening. The county executive made a decision that he was going to put central air conditioning in the easiest schools it is possible to put central air conditioning in first. And the central area had some very legitimate overcrowding issues that had to be dealt with. So what that means is the schools that were in the absolute best condition got their funding for central air conditioning and millions of dollars and put in. And that left nothing left to deal with facilities issues at Colgate and Dundalk and some of these schools that are in such deplorable condition that they need a wrecking ball. Lansdowne High School, you all toured it. It's a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. We're not just talking about heat. We're talking about mold, high humidity, and, you know, it's an absolute disaster. So now what's going to happen When the county executive's accelerated plan for central AC comes in, and he wants to put central AC in all of these schools, but some of these schools need wrecking balls, and the communities are saying this, and the communities are being ignored, and we don't have elections for the Board of Education until 2018, and the Board of Education has only two members, which the governor appointed, thank you very much, who are actually raising the issues and saying anything at all about answering questions. And the school system doesn't even afford the Board of Education the right to obtain the information from the central office that they ask for. So we have this situation in Baltimore County where you're it. You're the last place we have to come to end institutionalized child abuse. We have classrooms where the heat index gets above 120 degrees, where the county cooling centers are on and open for people who don't have AC in their homes to come, but the schools don't have air conditioning and they're not closed. And some people will say, well, the county's working on a heat closure policy. But the problem with that is it costs $2.8 million for every day past 191 days that the school systems have to stay open because they closed. And the estimate is that if we had a heat closure policy that took effect when it was a 95-degree heat index outside, that we would have to stay open 4 additional days. That's $11 million. You could have paid for portable AC by closing schools for 4 days. And yet, the 90-degree trigger that the superintendent's rule has put in place, that the Board of Education is working on a more expanded policy, will close schools those additional days. This is a very severe problem. We're not talking about a long-term plan versus a long-term plan. We're talking about an emergency management solution to deal with a crisis versus a long-term plan. I love the county executive's long-term plan, but what he refuses to speak about is the emergency management solution to deal with the health and safety of the children in our schools immediately right now. If I were to leave my children in a car, I would be arrested. And nobody would say, oh, but she did it once. It was only once. She only did it for 17 days. It's okay. But we have children. The paramedics came to Halstead twice in 1 week this past fall. Parents came to the meetings at the schools in the evening after you would have expected the school to begin to close down or to cool off. And they sat in the heat at the back-to-school nights that their children have to sit in. And that is why I now have a Facebook group with 1,563 people on it of teachers and parents in Baltimore County who are begging you to do something. This is not a situation that we can ignore because we have institutionalized child abuse. If you cannot protect the children in the state, I have no respect for any politician who is going to say that there is anything more important than the health and safety of children. And neglect is abuse. And when you leave children sitting in an environment that's over 120 degree in heat index and the cooling centers in the county are open, but so are the schools, and the parents are legally mandated to send their children there. Children who attend schools without air conditioning, their parents are legally mandated by the state to send their children to an abusive environment. If the state and the State Board of Education is going to mandate that the schools can't close, then I believe it's perfectly appropriate for the constituents in Baltimore County to come before the state and to say, you need to fix the problem. So these people that want to say that, oh, Comptroller Franchot and Governor Hogan, they're stepping into Baltimore County local politics, that's not what happened. He got into this past fall because I private messaged him on Facebook, because I read a transcript that was Governor O'Malley and Comptroller Franchot. It was the meeting where you offered Dr. Dance the comptroller toy that you ended up giving me. Just asking them to put portable AC in these schools so they can have relief immediately. And I realized that he said something about Anne Arundel County. Now, we had been told up to that point that portable AC isn't even possible, as in, like, impossible, like pigs will fly kind of impossible. But the public wanted to have a discussion about it, and the county executive and nobody in the county would entertain the discussion because they make the whole thing sound so incredibly complicated that a layperson cannot understand what in the heck they're talking about. So it falls upon us to trust you. And if Anne Arundel County did it, I don't care what any engineer says, it can be done. If there is a will, it can be done. But it is absolutely inexcusable to allow children to sit in an abusive environment for one more day. These schools do not operate like they were built to operate, such that air flows through them. New windows have been put in that are more efficient. They have turned these schools into greenhouses, which if you live in Buffalo, where I grew up, that'd be great. But it doesn't work so well south of the Mason-Dixon line. So ceilings have been lowered. The vents above the doors don't vent anymore. Windows and doors to the school can't be left open all night so that it cools. These schools start out in the 80s at 8 o'clock in the morning, get well into over 120-degree heat index by the evening, then they're closed up, they don't cool off, and they start the next day at the same. So when you have multiple days, this entire thing is a complete disaster. And until Baltimore County can reform how they approve capital budgets in the Board of Education level and the County Council level, and until they actually have the, I don't have polite language for this. So when they get it within themselves to actually do their jobs and actually say no to the county executive, we're not going to pass a school budget that we don't know anything about or a capital budget we don't know, then you might not have so many people from the county coming to the state. But until that happens, we need you. We need you to be able to stand up to the county executive and the Mike Millers and the Mike Bushes and all the other M&Ms and just say, politics is not worth the health and safety of children. And portable AC is so much cheaper to install. If we want to build new schools and deal with boilers and all of that, it's one-tenth of the cost to put in portable AC as it is to do central AC. This accelerated central AC program is going to eat so much money that you might actually have schools that can't get funding to get rebuilt that need to be rebuilt in Baltimore County. There are a lot of schools that you are being led to believe are in much better condition than they are actually in. And those schools need more than central AC. Lansdowne High School is just one example. And if the county executive is allowed to just push central AC in just to avoid boxed units, which I can't even imagine why you would avoid, no one is saying box units forever. Box units is a temporary solution to deal with an emergency situation that we have in a crisis of child abuse in our schools. We can still do all the central AC and build new schools and do a lot of other things that we might not have been able to do if we were dedicating the next however many years towards just rushing in tens of millions of dollars just on central air conditioning. And, I mean, I'm outraged that I'm a stay-at-home mom. I'm on the Central Area Education Advisory Council. I'm vice president of my community association. I do a lot of volunteer stuff. And I have spent astronomical amounts of time understanding the budget. I've read all the rules and policies of the school system. I don't understand why this isn't such common sense that we can't abuse children in schools, that someone hasn't done something about this sooner. And yet, I'll tell you what happens. The county executive gets elected. He's term limited. He has people that he has to pay back. Those schools get paid attention to. The other schools don't. Then the new county executive is elected. They're term limited. They have people they want to pay back. The exact same schools get the exact same communities, get the exact same funding. There's no equitability in how capital budgets are assessed. And some of these schools, Dundalk, Colgate, that are just now seeing in the budget, they're in the next proposals because 1,500 people on my Facebook group kept talking about how deplorable these schools are and posting pictures. And the community is becoming much more aware. And this isn't going to go away. You're not going to stop seeing because we're tired of the inequity that we're seeing in Baltimore County. And the situation is so much more complex, Treasurer Kopp, than what you're being led to believe. And I understand what you're saying about making choices with money, but this is not a choice of either or. This is a choice of how much money are we spending on paramedics to visit the schools. And let me tell you something. With these two opposing legal opinions, if somebody decides it's fiscal responsibility to decide not to put portable air conditioning in schools to help the health and safety of children, but they think that it's fiscal responsibility to have some legal wranglings and paying for courts and stuff like that so that you can oppose relieving the suffering of children, that is the most absurd thing I've ever seen in my life. The absolute most absurd thing that I've ever seen in my life. The M&Ms, they need to just stop. They're not helping their cause. In fact, I'm a Democrat, and I know tons of Democrats who've decided they're in love with Governor Hogan, regardless of his party affiliation, because the M&Ms are absurd. This is absurd to make children suffer. Like, how can you advocate for the suffering of children? Like,
I don't think anyone's advocating for the suffering.
It is. When you say that you're not going to alleviate abuse immediately, neglect is abuse. Neglect is abuse. The Social Service Department of the state says neglect is abuse. So, anyway,
well,
that's
you.
My whole tirade. Thank you for hearing
thank
me.
Thank you, Lily. I think you made... Well, let's give her a
round.
I think all of the speakers have made some incredible points, but three of them that you talked about, I mean, none of us are suggesting window air conditioner units instead of central air. We all support the eventual putting of central air in all of the schools, and it's a five-year plan or a seven-year plan, depending on who you talk to. We're talking about immediately resolving the problem, and it's not an either-or. It's both. We want both to happen.
I agree.
Number two, we have 24 jurisdictions. 22 of them have solved this problem and do not have hot kids in classrooms. There's only two that have failed, Baltimore County and Baltimore City, and it is outrageous, and it is disgraceful. And third, Anne Arundel County had a similar problem, and they addressed it with window air conditioner units and put 500 of them in, and they came before this board to testify about how incredible it was and what a great transformation it provided for the school system in Anne Arundel County. And we asked them to go down and talk with the folks in Baltimore County and Baltimore City to explain to them how it works. I don't know if that happened or not. But our next speaker is Kathleen Causey from the Baltimore County Board of Education. Good morning.
Good morning.
Or it's probably afternoon by now.
Good morning, Treasurer Kopp, Governor Hogan, and Comptroller Franchot, and our other distinguished guests. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you with a few remarks, and I emphasize few. I will try and make this brief because so many wonderful and accurate points have already been made this morning. And I'm going to make those remarks regarding Baltimore County Public Schools facilities needs, which are wide-ranging and systemic, including the lack of air conditioning for close to 30,000 students and their teachers. I'm Kathleen Causey, and I'm a resident of Baltimore County for over 20 years. I'm the parent of three children, including our second, who's about to graduate from an outstanding Baltimore County public high school. I'm grateful for the benefits that I received from an outstanding public education where I grew up, from elementary school through university. And I'm honored to try and pay that forward through volunteering to serve the community of Baltimore County and their students on the Board of Education, where we are trying to provide an excellent education for each student. Let me be clear that I am not speaking on behalf of the Board of Education today. Our chairperson is the official spokesperson for the Board of Education. But I am speaking as a concerned citizen, taxpayer, parent, and someone who has been informed by my experiences, including touring a number of schools throughout Baltimore County, but also other jurisdictions. And I appreciate all of those state officials and the county officials who have come and toured with us. With my experiences, and I just want to also say that all of the information I will be discussing is publicly available. Through my experiences, I believe that there needs to be increased transparency, accountability, a more comprehensive and objective approach to construction and facility needs, utilizing all tools available. And that community input needs to be much more greatly appreciated. And this will allow us to provide more efficient and effective use of taxpayer dollars to provide appropriate and equitable learning environments for all of our students. I believe there needs to be a better prioritization of student and system needs. In a school system that is making major investments in the frontier of digital learning, including over $50 million per year that we'll be paying for leasing devices when that initiative is fully implemented, we must provide the basics first, health and safety. And that comprehensive prioritization needs to happen at the county level. In looking at best practices of counties throughout the state of Maryland, I Googled 10-year facility plan, and I came up with Anne Arundel County Public Schools and found there an 80-page document. Comprehensive, clear, with objectives, community input, a 10-year plan where schools are listed with when and why they are going to receive their taxpayer dollars. That same Google search for Baltimore County Public Schools came up with a one-page press release from 2013, which indicated that we would soon have a 10-year facilities plan. Baltimore County school system and citizens are still waiting for that plan. So instead, Baltimore County Public Schools still receives lists that shift the schools, their planned upgrades, timelines, and financial commitment. And those lists have changed just this fiscal year at least three times. Just recently, the county executive removed from the Baltimore County Public School Board of Education proposed fiscal year 2017 operating budget a line item of $10 million that the board had voted to put into the proposed budget to use for immediate air conditioning relief. Although in the county executive's proposed operating and capital budget, he accelerates capital funding for air conditioning to try and solve the air conditioning issue by his latest list that says December 2019, that is not guaranteed. And I think you've heard some things today that will lend folks to pause about the accomplishment of that list. While I congratulate the community members, leaders, and elected officials who have brought this improvement in the timelines, and many of you are here today, and I really do applaud you and appreciate your input, it does improve the timeline from 2022 to 2019, but that plan still leaves some of our most fragile students to suffer at least three more years. In essence, still kicking the can down the road. The consequences of insufficient facilities remain. Detrimental health impacts to students, teachers, and staff. It's also an ineffective and wasteful use of tax dollars, as was pointed out, when we have greater capital construction needs. If we can solve this problem temporarily for less money, then we'll be able to aggregate those dollars to other construction needs. Board members were recently informed also that the cost to pay the teachers for an additional day of instruction is $2.8 million, as was already pointed out. So that if the heat and other inclement weather forces our system to stay into school past the 191 days that are in the teacher's master agreement, there is a real and significant fiscal impact. In order to protect the safety and welfare of students, the Policy Review Committee of the Board of Education is proposing a heat policy that will require the school system to close when extreme heat index is predicted in order to protect our students. If approved and implemented, statistics indicate we may need to close or close early four additional days per year, which amounts to over $11 million of teacher salary, potentially in one year. This exceeds the cost of installing window AC to schools who are at the end of this ever-changing list. BCPS recently provided a list that estimates between $9.5 million and $12 million for the 19 schools that seem perpetually to remain at the end of these lists. While I do not have the specific answer for this complicated situation, I know the best answer needs to ensure immediate relief, utilizing all tools, and will only come from all leaders working truly collaboratively with each other and the communities they serve. And I appreciate all who are focused on this issue. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
And thank you for your contribution and your leadership. But and I'm sure we're going to hear from Dr. Dance. I can't wait for him to come up here. Is that 10-year plan, which I've looked at, is an absolute piece of fiction. It is a fantasy. It is a fairy tale. Why do I say that? Well, look, the county executive and Dr. Dance's predecessor and now Dr. Dance have spent 6 years doing everything they possibly can to confront this air conditioning problem. And they've air conditioned over 6 years 20 schools. Now they're promising us that in the next 3 years, they're going to air condition 45 schools. Really? How do you do that? So here's a question for Dr. Dance, if he's waiting just to noodle on. Your testimony apparently is that it takes 3 years to do any kind of systemic air conditioning in a school. That's 1 year of planning. This is your people. 2 years to construct. So you did 20 schools in 6 years. How the heck are you going to do 45 schools in 3 years, but seriously, the end of the county executive's term, that whole plan will be thrown out the window because it's an act of fiction, fantasy, and it's a fairy tale. So thank you for trying to correct the situation. Good luck. I've got your back to the extent I can, and the governor, obviously, and all the other people that have testified. But it's I agree with Lily Rowe. This is a complete and utter mess, and it needs to be corrected by us.
I do appreciate all of your efforts. Thank you very much.
Could I just add that, Ms. Causey, I thank you for being here. I think you all have a very tough job, but that's where the job is with the school board. And I've read your minutes. I've read your stuff. I think you're taking a good, strong position. And anything we can do to help you do that, which I think is the appropriate process, I'm here for.
Thank you very much.
At this point, I'd like to call up the distinguished representatives of District 6 in Baltimore County, representatives to the state legislature. We have with us Delegate Bob Long and Senator Johnny Ray Salling. And I'd like to call both you guys. Oh, and Rick Metzger is here as well. I didn't have him on the list. Why don't you all three come up, and then you can just take turns. They do a terrific job representing District 6, Baltimore County, here in Annapolis.
Thank you, Governor, and thanks to the Board of Public Works. The actions that you guys are going to take is going to ensure that our district gets air conditioning, whether it's central air conditioning or whether it's window air conditioning. Our schools in our district have been let me rephrase that. We need to address this issue make sure that the kids at our schools have the best learning environment available. Right now, like you said, 120 degrees, that's unacceptable. And what you guys are doing is not kicking the can down the road no more. You're saying, hey, we thrown a line in the sand, we have to do something. And I appreciate that and all the hard work and that you've done on this. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Delegate.
Good afternoon. I'm going to keep it the KISS philosophy, keep it simple, silly. I have to tell you, Governor, as you know, I prayed for you when you were illness. But I have to be honest with you, ladies and gentlemen, I'm praying that the cool air continues for a while. Because at this rate, our young people deserve better. I look at these young people that have testified today before you. They've done an absolutely phenomenal job. I need to tell you that our young people in education are being taught so very well. That gives me hope for our future. But our future young people are standing in the elementary days of school, the potter's wheel of life. But we need to make this decision. We need to do the right decision. They sent me to Annapolis to work together. And I feel as though that the fractures that we have, we need to bring it together and work together, ladies and gentlemen. Let's do the right thing for our young people. God bless you.
Thank you.
I want to thank the Board of Public Works for this great opportunity and the staff and everyone here. And every person that represents not just Baltimore County but the state. Because this is a very important problem that we've had for a period of time. But we really not hit the dagger where it needs to be hit. We have not hit the bullseye. We've constantly missed it. And that's been the problem. We have hit here and hit there, but we've not really created something that would be beneficial, not for me, but for our kids. That's why the students are here. That's why the concern is here now. I went to the past 2 days, I went to Dunlop Middle School to meet the honor students and the straight A students. And it was an honor to be there. But going there and talking to the kids and the staff, you know, there's people that are in these schools that are limited what they can say because they're afraid. They don't want to say the right thing because repercussions, you know, it does happen. I'm here to stand here as a senator in my 6th district, and I'm not afraid to say what needs to be said. I'm tired of the neglect. I'm tired of people saying but not doing. There's things that need to be done. Should have been done a long time ago. But now we're here today, and we're here to do the right things for the kids. I'm going to have a granddaughter that's going to be going to Baltimore County School, which I'm very happy about that. But I do not want my granddaughter to go to a school because when she gets home, she's going to say, Mommy, it is so hot in there, I can't learn. I don't want that. I believe we have grandchildren in school here today. that are going to some school maybe that is saying that right now. Do you want your grandkids to say this? I believe you don't. This is an ongoing problem. The meetings that I've went to about this issue and the students and the teachers and the staff and now the board, I think at the same time, there's people that are making decisions. I think their hearts are right. But I still think, again, they're not hitting the net. They're not doing the right thing. All I can say is this. Let's work together for the common good of our people. I am public servant Johnny Ray Salling. That's what I'd rather be called. Because I want to prove myself that I'm not doing this for me. But I'm doing it for the people of my community and this state. And if I can do this, I don't want anything. I just want to smile and I want to say, look, the kids are coming home and they're learning and they're achieving. And we have more honor roll students. Why? Because they're in a comfortable environment and their teaching is much more easier and their learning is much more easier and they're proving that by their test scores. And when we do that, we are achieving something that we have never achieved before. We're doing great things. We have a great state. Let's continue to be great. And I believe the only way we can do that is to install things in the mind of our kids in the right way. And how we can do that? Let's have them in a comfortable environment and do the right thing. I want to thank you so much for this time, and God bless you.
Thank you, Senator. I want to thank everybody,
Governor,
that testified.
Can I ask, just for the record, seriously, this is just a straight question of Ms. Causey, because we have some information that I think probably is mistaken, and I want to correct.
Okay.
I was told, and I assume it is mistaken, that the school board had a proposal for window air conditioners and rejected it? Was there a proposal before your board to put more money into window air conditioners and it was later changed to put...
The board voted at its February meeting to include a line item of $10 million into that fiscal year operating budget. That has to go through the county to be approved for $10 million for utilizing air conditioning to quickly mitigate the air conditioning problem.
Okay.
So that passed.
Was there a motion on window air conditioning? That's what I'm confused about.
It was an item for $10 million to immediately mitigate the problem, which is the $10 million, and it was cut.
Right,
out
and
the
then it was
executive.
Removed from the.
That's what I said earlier in the meeting.
Okay, maybe we need corrected
minutes. We're about to
move
on to Howard County now, though.
I'm just looking at your transcript, and I would suggest you go back maybe and talk to the staff to clear up the transcript.
I think everybody's clear but you, but we'll clear it up with you after.
Well, I believe
we can do this.
Yeah, that's wrong. Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, and
I want to thank all the people who came to talk about Baltimore County and Baltimore City air conditioners, and we have a few more speakers here that now want to come speak in support of transparency and accountability in the Howard County school system.
Good.
I'd like to call on Kristen Combs, Howard County activist. Kristen.
Can I submit a couple of charts? Thank you to Governor Hogan, Comptroller Franco, and Treasurer Kopp for the opportunity to speak today to discuss school construction, an issue I know that this board takes very seriously. My name is Kirsten Coombs. I live in Columbia, and I'm a member of the Columbia Town Center Village Board, but I am here as a private citizen. As a Village Board member, though, I have been involved in the downtown Columbia development plans with we're expecting 5,500 new units. And there are triggers in some of the development plans that are known as community enhancements, programs, and public amenities, CEPAs, that require the developer to provide land or perform an action before the next step can be taken in building. The CEPA that affects schools requires the developer to, if deemed necessary by the Board of Education, reserve an adequate school site or provide an equivalent location within downtown Columbia prior to the approval of the site development plan for the 1,375th new residential unit. However, given some of the capacity numbers that are on the attachments that I've provided you, I have concerns about the calculation being used for the yield of children from those new units. I have personal experience, as my more than 100-unit development was forecast to have zero children. Zero. And I can tell you, I had a child. And looking at the bus stop every morning with my child, there were more than zero children that were living in my development. That contributed to struggling with a few years of being about 25% over capacity at Running Brook Elementary School in downtown Columbia. We now have an addition, but it's at capacity already. So my issues are the forecasted yield for the new units in downtown Columbia, and number two, that the school system has discretion over this process. Because what has happened over the past few years has not lent me confidence in their analyses. I realize that we have capacity in the western part of the county, and I understand that. And the Board of Education will need to deal with that in terms of redistricting. But we have to start with the core of the problem, assuming that there will be fewer children. As an accountant for 20 years, I have used the principle of conservatism, recognizing the chance of a lower profit by using a slightly higher estimate for a worse outcome. It's ironic that our school system uses an outrageously high growth rate for health costs, if you have been witnessing anything that's going on in our school, in our budget process in the county, but a very low yield rate for new residential units. According to the 2015 feasibility study that I've provided you, it includes an external analysis that notes that actual elementary enrollment was 2.8% above the projection, and kindergarten was underestimated by 8.1%, which continued a four-year trend of missing the mark. People do move to Howard County for our schools, and that's expected to continue. I would like to acknowledge. I'm pleased with the 21st century school commission that's being formed, and I hope that they take a more realistic analysis of what our school needs are, because we are growing and we need to be more realistic about that. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next we have Vicki Cutronio. I don't know if I said Vic Cutronio. Exactly there. Second time was good. Second Cutronio. Thank you, Vicki. Good morning.
Good morning. Afternoon. Thank you, Treasurer Kopp, Governor Hogan, and Comptroller Franchot for the opportunity to speak. I just want to start by saying, being witness to the effects air quality issues have had on our students, I would like to just express my support for Baltimore County and the efforts that they're going through. It's amazing the difference of the educational experience of children when their air quality is good. My name is Vicki Cutronio. I live in Howard County, and I'm here to talk about transparency. The failure of the members of the Howard County Board of Education and our superintendent to respond in a meaningful way to the community about years-long hidden mold issues at Glenwood prompted me to start a Facebook page to serve as a platform for communication, and somehow I've ended up here testifying in front of you all on the same issues. Though I take issue with many of the responses that the school system supplied you all with in regards to the BPW meeting in January, I'm going to speak today on the question that you asked Dr. Foose during her testimony, and that was, why didn't you tell parents, the community, about mold issues? And her response was, we believed it was a maintenance issue. They believed it was a maintenance issue despite the fact that there were two workmen's compensation claims filed regarding air quality, that also that there was a teacher that requested a health-related transfer because she was diagnosed with sick building syndrome and was told by her doctor not to be in the building. They thought it was a maintenance issue, even though teachers had been begging for the community to be told for years. And also, Dr. Foose received an email directly from a staff member detailing the health concerns she was having and the concerns she had for the health of the children. There was even a teacher who actually did email parents directly to let them know that many students in her classroom had experienced dizziness, and she herself had experienced severe dizziness to the point where she was holding onto her desk. And this teacher was reprimanded by the school system for communicating directly with parents, and she was threatened with suspension. The school system then sent out an email to refute what she had said to the parents. So I find it hard to believe that the school system believed this was a maintenance issue. I'm not sure anybody believes that mold is just a maintenance issue. And the fact that they are continuing to take this stance leads me to believe that they're not owning the mistakes, and they're not prepared to be transparent moving forward to issues that are going to come up. Just this morning, I got a message from another school, and it's like the same old thing. The school system came out. They did inform the community, but that was back in December, and now they've had another huge mold outbreak. The issues have come back, a lot of humidity issues with the HVAC, and they have a big mold outbreak right now, and students and staff are sick. Two staff members were hospitalized, and there's been no community notification. You know, she sent me pictures of black mold covering a desk. And, I just feel like we're going to go down the same path with not being transparent about these issues and admitting them. I'm requesting that there be some sort of oversight to ensure that maintenance dollars stay where they belong, that you give to the school system, and perhaps explore the possibility of indoor air quality-focused audits to ensure that the schools are safe. We cannot rely on our school system. They've let us down, and we don't have faith that they will do the right thing. So I appreciate your time, and if you have any questions.
Thank you very much. No questions. Next we have, and I think this is our last speaker, we have Christina Delmont Small, Howard County.
Good afternoon, Governor Hogan, Treasurer Kopp, and Comptroller Francho. Thank you so much for this opportunity to come and speak with you today. My name is Christina Delmont Small. I live in Howard County, Maryland. I have two students in the Howard County school system, and I am a Howard County taxpayer. As you well know, millions of dollars a year are provided by the state and the county to our school systems for facility maintenance and capital investment. And this is to create a healthy and safe environment where our teachers can teach and our children can learn. And as we've seen in one school in our school system, the Glenwood Middle School, that when maintenance issues go wrong, they can go very, very wrong. And we know today that they had mold in that school since at least 2010. So this was a long-term project. This wasn't a short-term problem. Our superintendent came before you earlier this year, and she stated that the problem was remediated by accelerating replacement of the HVAC system to the tune of $3 million, and that the problem is behind us. However, last summer, when this remediation and this change occurred, apparently was only phase one. Phase two is to be completed this summer for an additional cost of $4.8 million. The problem is, however, students and teachers are still getting sick. So how could our superintendent come before you and tell you that the problem was behind us if they still have not completed the work? And this is a challenge that we as parents and community members are having in Howard County, is we're being told one thing, but then when we do our own digging and we look at the evidence of what is happening on the ground in our schools, we come up with a much different picture. In a recent report to the General Assembly, Howard County School System staff were asked what problems needed to be improved in facility maintenance and school construction. They provided three answers. They said continued budget cuts,
increased number of deferred maintenance projects, and less staff. So those were the problems that they were dealing with. However, what was interesting, I did some digging myself, and from fiscal year 11 to fiscal year 16, our school system transferred out $10.8 million out of operation of plant and maintenance of plant. In FY13, they had 106.5 FTE maintenance staff, and now in FY16, 97. So also in FY17, we're looking at a possible 70 project, $57 million cost of systemic renovation projects that are going to have to be deferred maintenance. Clearly, our school system has to do a better job of taking care of our buildings. I'm concerned, however, that the school system doesn't fully understand what has led to these problems. I don't think they have a concept of whether or not it is because they're transferring out funding out of their operating budget. They're reducing staff of the people who are supposed to be going into our buildings to make sure that they are safe. What about the capital money? How do we know that the capital funding is going where the capital funding is supposed to be directed? When we get our capital dollars, they have two specific areas I'd like to discuss. One is the roofing and the other is systemic maintenance. The problem is those are very large categories. There's no way for myself, or I don't even know anyone else, who can try to look through to figure out and say, okay, you told us we needed a roof at school X. Did you really spend the money at school X? Or did you take the money from someone else to put it somewhere else? And that is a huge concern, not only on the operating side, but obviously on the capital side. And the operating side is important because the operating side has the responsibility of implementing the capital dollars that our taxpayers are giving to our school systems. So providing more money isn't necessarily the answer. The answer, I believe, is better oversight and transparency, because if we don't have the oversight and the transparency, there is no way that our community, our schools, our school teachers, individuals such as yourselves can hold those who are responsible for doing what they're supposed to do with the money accountable. So what I would like to do is request that we perhaps come up with a better system, because obviously this is an issue that is not only with Howard County. There are other school systems, and there's a spectrum. Some are doing a better job, some are not. However, the question is, the schools where they're not doing their due diligence, it not only harms those school districts, it does harm the state as a whole and all of our students. So without transparency, we can't hold our school systems accountable, and it is not benefiting our children. So thank you again for having me this afternoon. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank all of you who came out today in support of our students and in support of our schools. I just want to say that I think it's a shame that we have to continue to have these discussions about air conditioning and mold problems in our schools. We've solved the air conditioning problem in every jurisdiction in the state except for two. As far as the lack of air conditioning in Baltimore County, due to petty politics, poor management, and indifference, the problem has continued to fester. Tens of thousands of students have been left to suffer in sweltering, unhealthy classrooms year after year after year, resulting in kids going home sick and exhausted, and in some cases even resulting in trips to the emergency room. 7 months ago, I agreed with the comptroller that this situation, particularly in Baltimore County, was disgraceful and completely unacceptable. We directed the county to come up with a plan to bring immediate relief to the students and teachers sweating in these unair-conditioned classrooms. Local school board, as I mentioned earlier, added $10 million into the budget in order to immediately remediate the air conditioning problem. Unfortunately, the county executive vetoed that money and cut it out of the budget, apparently preferring to do nothing for 5 years. That is, again, completely inexcusable and absolutely unacceptable. We've given the leadership in Baltimore County every chance to address this problem over the past year. We asked them to come before us, state their case as to why they were opposed to kids getting this relief and why they were insisting on continuing to leave them in these horrible conditions until 2021. They refused to come before this board. They continued to ignore the problem. And the only response we got from them was that if we would take away half of all the state school construction money from all the other counties and give it to them instead, only then would they be able to solve the air conditioning problem. And again, they would do that 5 years from now. Next, they went to the legislature, as the comptroller talked about earlier, to sneak an amendment to the capital budget in the middle of the night while no one was watching, to try to stop the Board of Public Works from acting to fix this problem, as we have an obligation to do. We are the stewards of all these billions of dollars we're putting into education. We have the responsibility to make sure that we're spending those dollars wisely and that they're not being wasted. Baltimore County School Board has a surplus of $40 million from last year sitting in the bank. They were willing to take $10 million of that and fix the air conditioners again. They stepped up to solve the problem by earmarking $10 million of the extra money they had laying around to immediately install and immediately resolve this problem as we requested. County executive continued to oppose the air conditioning and inexplicably cut those funds from the school board's budget. Frankly, I've given up trying to figure out why these folks have been more interested in playing games rather than just fixing a problem involving the health and safety of their students and their teachers. But I can tell you this, the time for playing games is over. On item 20, I am going to make a motion that the Board of Public Works withhold $10 million from Baltimore County's request and $5 million from Baltimore City's request until both jurisdictions return to this board with a plan detailing how they are going to install air conditioning units in all unair-conditioned classrooms by the beginning of the next school year, the 2016-17 school year. As I mentioned a couple of times, Baltimore County Schools, this is not a matter of money. It's not about taking it away from boilers and roofs. We have a $40 million surplus sitting in the bank in the Baltimore County school system, and they want to spend the money to fix the air conditioners. In Baltimore City, they're receiving $1 billion in state funding through the 21st Century Schools program. So it's not a matter of funding for them either. I believe it is our obligation to provide relief from these stifling, unhealthy classroom environments for our students and teachers, and I'm going to make that motion. Is there a second or any discussion?
Do you want discussion before?
Sure.
Okay. Yes, I talked about political theater, and I regret, Governor, that I think this is part of it. We have a system for doing things. This is a travesty. I believe it's also probably illegal for the Board of Public Works to decide to cram down its priority on the local planning, the planning system. I think we should alleviate the discomfort in the classrooms as soon as possible, but do it in a concerted and positive and long-term way. I am concerned. Can I just finish? I am concerned about the advice, as I told you, from our bond counsel and what this means. I am also concerned about what is going to be cut out of the budget. I think this is just the wrong way to go, and I hope that the task force on 21st century school construction will be looking at this process as a whole, because I fear it has now been broken.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Governor. I'm happy to second your excellent motion, but I'd like to just thank from the bottom of my heart the families and the children that showed up today. Thank you. And the treasurer mentioned the $10 million vote. She's got some information that, implies they might have voted against
the $10 million for air conditioning units. What happened was they brought that subject up, and everybody said we can't possibly challenge County Executive Kamenetz. He'll be really mad at us. He'll retaliate against us. So you ended up with the $10 million, as the governor said, for air conditioning. And, of course, that was promptly lined out by the one person that is supposed to be looking out for Baltimore County. Is that just unbelievable? So let me thank, frankly, the governor for taking the motion. I just want to thank everyone who came because it's not easy. There's a climate of fear up there in Baltimore County. Someone mentioned the teachers can't speak honestly. So there's nothing I can really add other than say that each of you in your own compelling way have reminded me exactly what we're fighting for here today and why this means so much. And to be honest, I needed this because I was getting a little tired in the battle. We mentioned 5 years ago when this entire issue could have been resolved for less than $10 million, 5 long years ago, all 40,000 kids could have had air-conditioned classrooms in Baltimore County and Baltimore City. But nope. My way or the highway. Not me. I run this place. Stay out, Mr. Comptroller of Baltimore County. It's my business. My county. Okay. 5 years ago, it could have been all completely resolved. Now we hear 5 years later, we have this fairy tale and fictional fantasy of a report from Dr. Dance. I see he came in. I have no problem with Dr. Dance personally. He's a terrific young professional. But I think he would admit in a private moment that that plan is just a bunch of, well, I use baloney, and that's what it is. So I'm tired, frankly, of engaging in this constant and never-ending trench warfare over an issue that is an obvious no-brainer to every sane person outside of State Circle and Towson's executive office building. I emphasize the delegates and senators who testified and my friends and colleagues, the vast majority of them, even the ones on the conference committee that signed that horrible amendment, even them, they're innocent. They're just doing the bidding of three people, county executive, the speaker, and the Senate
Governor,
president. And I am sorry if the treasurer, I hope the treasurer will let me finish my statement.
188 elected members, there's no need for that.
Okay, everywhere, thank you, Madam Treasurer, if I could just reclaim my right to speak. When I go around the state, everyone says to me, what's the big deal with the air conditioning issue? I mentioned 5.97 million people live in the state of Maryland. You'd be hard-pressed to find one of them that agrees with those three, unfortunately, very powerful individuals that I mentioned. So I'm tired of the gamesmanship from Baltimore County, the excuses to explain why this can't be done, the fabricated and ever-changing numbers, the press conferences demanding even more money from the state, and the crazy promises that Baltimore County never intended to keep in the first place, all because there are politicians in this world who would rather protect their own prerogatives than be responsive to those who pay our salaries. You're the taxpayers. What about the respect, the responsiveness, the results that we owe you, the people that pay our salaries? So, thank you for helping us protect those who are most vulnerable among us. I also happen to be tired of Annapolis politicians who apparently have nothing better to do than hover in a back room somewhere and throw up one legal and procedural roadblock after another, and I'll include the Attorney General in that. Thank you very much, Madam Deputy Attorney General. Whether it is by poisoning the well at the IAC itself, think of that for a minute. Trying to kill the whole thing with some vague and mysterious budget language that magically appeared out of nowhere in the middle of the night. Holding up a set of regulations that we don't even need, frankly, because, as I said, they were illegal policy statements to begin with, but we wanted to try to be helpful. and now extracting a self-serving piece of legal advice from the Attorney General's office, all because, oh, and then we have the Wall Street letter also, in the power of these Annapolis insiders reach even up to Wall Street. So it's more important to protect other politicians, I guess, is the thinking, who are in the fraternity, than it is protect those kids who have nobody on the inside fighting for them. And most of all, I'm tired of having to look a mom or dad in the eye every time I go into the city or the county and try to explain why some kids are regarded as important enough to get air conditioning installed in their schools, while their kids, Southworth and others, thank you for coming down here, apparently are not. How the heck do you have that conversation with somebody when we're talking about their little boy or their little girl? I just remind everybody, those little boys and little girls, there are 40,000 of them. And I'm tired because all of us could have been avoided so easily. For a small fraction of the hundreds of millions of dollars the state of Maryland has invested in Baltimore County and Baltimore City schools over the past 5 years, every child and every teacher could be sitting in a classroom right now that is safe, healthy, conducive to learning. I'm done. I'm done trying to do this the easy way by meeting with other politicians and trying to persuade them, gee, I know you. I've served with you for 20 years. You've really got to look at this thing on the merits and separate out the petty politics. I'm done with that. I'm done with begging bureaucrats to set just a little bit aside so that the kids can enjoy the same conditions that all of us take for granted. Trust me, my office is air-conditioned. I'm done with hosting community forums and writing op-eds. God bless the editorial page of the Baltimore Sun. I should include them. It's a there are three politicians plus the Baltimore Sun editorial page, and there are 5.97 million Marylanders who think otherwise. So, Governor, I'm delighted that you happen to step up to the plate and take care of this problem by decisive action. Tens of thousands of people, young people who sit in these unhealthy conditions, these unsafe conditions, these conditions where they can't learn, they have to put their heads down on their arms, they're so wet and tired and hot. And it's time to, unfortunately, we said we're going to have to do it the hard way. We're approving all of the school construction money. We are fencing off $10 million for Baltimore County and $5 million for Baltimore City. You can have that money. You know, we're not cutting it. You can have it. Just do the right thing and bring us the plan that by September we'll have every one of these 4,000 classrooms totally air-conditioned with a window box unit. Governor, thank you. I said bottom of my heart to these wonderful constituents and Maryland citizens. Let me just thank you, because I made all these arguments 5 years ago, but your predecessor couldn't pick his eyes up off his BlackBerry long enough to listen. And as a result, we had this disgraceful situation. And I feel bad. But, sheesh, I'm all rejuvenated now. I was tired. Now I'm all ginned up. And I hope you guys keep up the fight, because it's going to happen. Thank you.
Governor, the politics of fear, threat, and demagoguery, I regret, has come to Annapolis.
Okay. There's been a motion made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 No.
Motion passes 2-1.
Is Dr. Danson...